You're listening to Face Off, episode 96, recorded November 22nd, 2010. This episode of Face Off is brought to you by AgileTask. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And RocketShipIt. RocketShipIt, the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. RocketShipIt is shipping made easy. Go to rocketshipit.it. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm the other host, Mark Sanborn.
The other prestigious host, Mark Sanborn. In this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and of course, web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com, and they're worth it. They're always worth it because we write down everything. We are our document for this show notes is like a steel trap.
In this episode, there's going to be a bajillion links. So, especially this episode, you're going to want to go check them out.
A bajillion?
Yep,
that's crazy. All right, so let's get into our let's dive right into our news and follow ups. Which is first, I want to talk about Netflix officially launching a stream only plan. This is breaking news. Came in our inbox like an hour ago, but honestly, I'm not surprised. I can't remember where I heard it, but I've heard that this has been Netflix's direction for a long time. For a long time, they've wanted to focus on getting out of the shipping DVD business and get into getting, you know, as much premium streaming content online for people as possible.
Yeah, I think we actually covered this about a year ago. They decided that they're going to have a streaming-only plan and kind of phase the DVDs out. They couldn't do that a year ago because they didn't have quite the selection online, but that things have changed. It's getting better. If it's not up to, you know, your standards yet, it's not, you know, Netflix's fault. They are dealing with the movie industry, and it's difficult to get everyone to agree when movies should be released for streaming versus DVD, and they're trying to work all that out. But they do now have a watch it instantly DVD plan, so you don't have to get DVDs in the mail.
Yeah, they actually bumped up the price of the one DVD plan, which a lot of people have, like I have. I have a one DVD. I had a one DVD plan because really I use streaming a lot more. The DVD thing, you know, streaming for me, it's all about the convenience. Like I usually don't like decide like, oh, I'm going to sit down and watch this movie. I go, I'm going to sit down and watch whatever I find that sounds interesting. So after a while, I stopped watching the physical DVDs. We went down to one DVD and just did streaming on everything we have on Xbox, on, you know, all the computers. And so the second they sent this email, the first thing I did was click and sign up for the $2 a month cheaper plan to do streaming only, no DVDs. And I like it.
Yeah, I've decided to, for at least for now, to stick with the one DVD just because I want to be able to say, you know, if somebody says, hey, have you checked out this cool new Harry Potter movie or something, I can, you know, check out the DVD because chances are it won't be on Instant Watch yet. I have to say, though, Instant Watch is awesome for people that like TV shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can find some old TV show that has like 20 seasons and you can watch them all in a row. It's a good waste of time in a good way.
Absolutely, and you love Harry Potter, so I don't know if everybody knows, but Mark has an I Heart Harry Potter tattoo on his arm. Moving on, let's get on to our Geek Tool of the Week.
How can you move on with a note like that?
So our Geek Tool of the Week. I called this one because it's actually the Barnes & Noble Nook. I've been looking. I decided I kind of want an e-reader for a while. I decided to go for the Nook. But really what I guess with this, you know, I'm going to put a link. We have a link to the Kindle in the show notes too. The Amazon Kindle is also a great device, I think. It just really depends on what you want. I like the form factor of the Nook better. I don't really need a keyboard a lot on it, so I kind of like that it's a little slimmer without the keyboard. Looks a little sleeker. But other than that, they're basically the same. They have almost, basically identical displays. I'm talking about the original Nook 2, not the new color Nook that came out. I decided I like e-ink. I wanted E-Ink because I, you know, I like the way it reads. It reads very easy. It doesn't hurt the eyes. Like an LCD, you know, I have trouble reading anything on a computer for too long or LCD screen. So I like the E-Ink. Went out, got the Nook 3G, and it's a great device. For me, this sounds odd, but one of the biggest complaints I have with books is I like to read them as I'm trying to fall asleep. So I like to read them in bed, which means because the book folds out like a butterfly, you'll sit it on one side and read one page, but when you want to read the other page, you have to like move it, right? because like the other one is flat and you can't see it as well. I feel like I should be drawing a diagram for the show notes or something like that. Maybe I'll like make a video or something. But it used to bug me because I'd sit and read and then I have to like flip it over to see the other one. And also I'm legally blind to one eye, so I really can only see out of one eye, so it was kind of heightened more. I couldn't really, you know, and it sounds weird, but that drove me nuts and it really prevented me from reading a lot more than I thought I could. So the idea of an e-book reader is great for me because I can just kind of lay it on its side with my finger and just click the button to turn the pages. It's great. The Nook is awesome. They just came out with a 1.5 update on it. It makes it a lot faster. Really cool device. Really small. It's not color, but it's grayscale. But the grayscale is gorgeous. It has a lot of levels of gray. I don't know how to put that really, but you have the power of the Barnes & Noble, ebook library. Same with Amazon. If you get the Kindle, really great libraries. I found that I didn't think that the libraries differed a whole lot, because what I think happens is usually when most publishers decide that they'll release a book in an electronic format, they'll do it for Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I don't think Amazon has a lot of exclusives.
Okay.
But
how's the purchase process been like?
It's super easy.
Books and
well, once you put your credit card information in your account, you can just purchase books. So
can you get a list of all the, you know, New York Times bestsellers and just scroll through them and select?
Yeah, like on the book they have like the Barnes & Noble top sellers, and then they have the New York Times bestsellers. One thing I have heard that does make the Amazon a little more enticing is that the Amazon like top 100 sellers list is becoming a sort of definitive top seller list, kind of like the New York Times bestseller.
Oh, wow.
So being able to browse those on the device would be nice. The Nook does, as well as the Kindle, have a web browser now that you can use too. So if you want, you could browse and look it up. But yeah, the in-device screen, the interface is a little clunky because just it is an e-ink screen, so it's not quite as smooth. Like you hit the down arrow to go to the next thing, and it's kind of like flash, flash, down to the next one. You're like, well, that's funky. But in general, I like it a lot.
Cool.
Yeah, so check it out. And I think reading is great. I wish I did more of it, which is why I'm glad I got this device. I've already been reading a lot more than I used to because it makes it easy. We've talked about this on the show. I have a hard time falling asleep, and I read one tip that said a great way to fall asleep and not feel like you're losing productivity is if you don't fall asleep for 15 minutes, read a book for 15 minutes, then try and fall asleep again. And if you don't fall asleep, do 15-minute cycles until eventually you get tired. And either way, you feel good because you read a book when you weren't sleeping, and then it should get you tired because it'll keep your brain going.
Excellent.
All right, so let's move into our web apps. Our first web app, this is another interesting story because it came about from me asking our friend Rob Lund. I was like, Rob, this guy, our friend Rob, reads a lot of books. He like reads a ton. So I asked him, I said, is there a website or something that you use where I can see some of the books that you're reading, the ones you're interested in? And so he said, well, I kind of tried this one. You should check it out. And it's at getglue.com. And really what the website is it's basically a social platform for liking. They use the term like, which is very Facebooky, but it's not attached to Facebook. But you like movies, video games, books, topics, all kinds of stuff. So the past couple days, he and I have been going in and liking all of our movies and video games and books that we read and enjoy. And it's just kind of an interesting little platform. They have kind of a goofy hitch where if you get badges and achievements, which, we're big fans of. But if you get enough of them or if you get particular ones, they will actually send you a packet of physical stickers, like little round
stickers. So you can show it off to your physical friends.
Yeah, I guess.
That you got these awesome achievements.
Well, I think the whole point is trying to take your sort of, web app achievements and sort of being able, your badges and being able to display them in a real world. So it's kind of like, your physical manifestation of your badges and all your work, liking, clicking the like button on all these various things on the website. But it's a cool way to see, you know, like I found out with Rob, it's like I've seen a lot of the movies that he really likes, and I'm able to explore some of the books that he's been reading. When you're actually reading or watching something, you can, you know, post it on there, kind of like Twitter or whatever, like, hey, I'm reading this. You check in, kind of like Goldwall and Foursquare, like, oh, I'm checking in that I'm reading this book. Like, I'm reading one now by Dan Pink called Drive. Really cool book. You know, I can go on the website and say, check in, I'm reading Drive right now. Like, oh, man, or I'm watching this TV show right now. And you're, you know, you can let your friends know. And then you can comment, of course, comment and rate on things that you think are interesting. So your friends and other people, too, because it uses that information to give you suggestions. Gives you the information so you can find and discover new stuff.
This is great. The way to I would describe it is it's kind of like Twitter, but very structured. Like you're watching, you know, this TV show. You read this book, which is nice because you can actually click on. So I see a lot of people are watching Conan. You click it and you can see all the different people are doing that same thing. With Twitter, you'd have to like search for a hashtag or just search for the TV show's name. This is a little bit more structured. You can see how many people visited, checked in to that book or TV show or whatever, who likes it. So that's kind of cool.
It's like a Gowalla for things, like a Gowalla for TV and videos, because it even has like the little round badges, like you get a Gowalla and stuff. But cool way, yeah. I'm Jay Robbins on there too, if you want to add, so I can see, you know, if you want to show me some cool books that you're reading and stuff, I'd love to, because I'm getting back into reading. I didn't read forever. I mean, I had a hard time anyways. If something didn't really catch my attention, I had a hard time reading it, plus sort of just the sort of making time for reading and stuff. So I'm really excited about it. So I want to find cool books and stuff from people. So add me up.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I'm still trying to rock the audio books because I prefer that a little bit more than reading. For now, so but I'd be interested to see what kind of books you're
reading. Yeah, you'll have to come over and you'll have to go over and play with the Nook. I think it might you might be impressed with it. Well, you were kind of a hard sell. We were talking about this.
I'm always a hard sell.
Yeah. Well, you like audiobooks. I like audiobooks too, but I guess my problem was that I tried to listen to them while I was going to sleep, and then the problem was I would fall asleep and it would listen to the entire audiobook, and then the next day I'd be like, oh man, I have no clue where I am. And so I'd rewind back, and I found that sometimes I would listen to the same section 10 times, you know. It just was crazy. So the physical book works better for me for going to sleep. But I like audiobooks, too. I definitely don't want to knock them. I'm a huge fan. So check it out. Let's go on to our next web app. The next web app is called Down or Not, which Down or Not is a social – is just a website. Kind of like Down for Me or everyone else, where you can go and check on a website to see if something is down. Which is kind of nice, but that's not what I want to talk about because those exist. We know all about those. This is actually the social edition of downornot.com. You can actually go there and see they have a list of all these sort of social network APIs, which we're all using to mash up and integrate and all this cool stuff that we're doing today. But sometimes it can be very frustrating because you think that your code isn't working, but actually the service is down or having some sort of disruption. But you can go to social.downornot.com. And there it will give you a list of all these different social network APIs and gives you sort of just a quick glance look at whether or not it's up or down or having disruption. And then you can see like maybe a 5-day overview of all of them. So you can see like, oh man, looks like the MySpace login is having some disruption because for 3 days in a row it's been down. Go figure, right? Who, you shouldn't be mashing up with MySpace anyways. Get out of there. But a cool way to see, you know, status and updates of all these different social website APIs that you're using.
What's really interesting to me is a lot of these sites don't have a perfect uptime during the day. You know, usually when I go to, let's say, Flickr, it works 100%, pretty much 100% of the time I've ever been there. It's worked. They're saying that they went down a little, you know, for a few minutes today. Pretty crazy that they do go down or they're not, their login has some kind of a disruption.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see, and it's interesting to see which ones are doing better than others. Looks like Classmates login does pretty well. Delicious. Dig. And down towards the bottom, YouTube has some.
So if you're you can actually click on a site and get even more interesting details about their they're down and out. So I clicked on Flickr, and what you can see is that people are reporting service disruptions in a very particular area. So maybe, you know, their infrastructure, okay. They have very robust infrastructure in the U.S., but like in Australia and Southeast Asia, maybe it's a little flakier, and that's why you're seeing login disruptions at Flickr.
Yeah, so like Canada has some downtime for Facebook, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And it shows you the days. I guess November 18th, Facebook had some issues, which was a few days ago. Graph it out. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so check it out, social.downornot.com. It's a quick way to check out all that cool stuff. But I have an assignment. I have an assignment for our listeners. If you have a news item, a geek tool, a follow-up, or a web app you think we should look at, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Send us a tweet, email us, let us know about it, and I promise to give you an A+ if you do, because I'm that cool. Let's get into our topic this week. It is 2 days now, it's Thursday is Thanksgiving, right?
So 3 days?
3 days. And so we thought this, we'd spend this episode talking about the things we are thankful for, because we're thankful for a lot of things. It's been a really cool year thus far. You know, what's funny is we don't really do this in my family, like sit and talk about what we're thankful about. I think some people do. but you know, really in the area of web technology this year, I'm very thankful. There's a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is kind of a funny holiday, at least for me. It's just a gathering, you know, which is always good to get family and friends together. But it seems like it's just a reason to eat a lot of food.
Isn't it for everybody? I agree. I eat a lot of food and I sit and BS with my family. So always a good time, always a good excuse. It's going to be an interesting Thanksgiving here because the weather here in the northwestern United States is pretty miserable right now. It's really cold, super snowy, and the roads are just miserable.
Yeah, I hear it's supposed to get to negative 20 by Thursday.
Yeah.
Which is, I remember we were talking with the Boxy guys at CES, and CES is January 6th or something, and it was like negative 20 in Montana then, and he was talking to us, and he's like, what do you guys do when it gets to negative 10 or 15? We're like, I don't know, stay inside.
Yeah, it's funny. We were like, we sit and use things like Boxy, man. We need those things, yeah.
Can't go outside.
Yeah, isn't it like Thanksgiving is like the second most busy holiday as far as travel is concerned or something? I can't remember. No, well, 4th Black of July Friday, is like the first, isn't
July,
it?
Yeah. Well, 4th of July is a big camping day, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people. Labor Day is big, too. Either way, there's going to be a lot of people on the roads and stuff, so be safe, be careful. But in light of that, if you happen to be listening to this while you're driving somewhere for Thanksgiving, be safe. Let's talk about some of the things that we're thankful for. We tried to pick things that, you know, were sort of new this year that we're thankful for, but there's always some classics that Mark and I are always thankful for, things that we always love, and we say, you know, whoever did that, thank you so much. And the first on that category for both of us is Vim.
Yeah, Vim is the text editor of choice. I switched to it probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I couldn't imagine switching to something else. I absolutely love it. It's been around for, I think, since the 70s, at least in its first iteration, VI.
Yeah, Vim stands for VI Improved. I don't know what, visual interface or something. I don't know what it stands for. Yeah, it's what you and I use for our editors. I love it. I even found out we were talking with Rob, and he develops primarily in Windows, but actually he just admitted that he was starting up an Ubuntu VM as we were getting ready to record. So kudos to him. But you know, I even found out today that I use NerdTree to do tree browsing and stuff while I'm in Vim, and I found that if you use like GVim or MacVim, you can actually still use the mouse and traverse the folders, which sometimes can be quicker than using the keyboard. So very excited about that. Very often, very rarely is the mouse faster than the keyboard. You know, one of the few times, but I'll give it that. But on that same tone, being that our friend Rob Lund is doing right now, the second thing we're thankful for and always thankful for is Linux.
Yeah, Linux, you know, if you really think about it, it's becoming more and more awesome, really. My phone is running Linux. Android wouldn't be possible without Linux. I'm thankful for it's my main development OS. I have a Windows box. I even have a Mac, and I still prefer Linux for programming.
Yeah,
just because it contains all kinds of tools that I love and use. Server from web servers. My web servers are hosted on it. I develop in it. Just awesome. So
yeah. So things inside of that we are also very thankful for that are components of Linux or whatever is SSH. I love SSH. I love being able to SSH into my home box. I love being able to SSH into remote web servers. You know, I like administration via the console. It's just the way I like to go.
Yeah, I especially picked SSH because I recently saw an article there where they were talking about a lot of companies use it. I mean, it's one of the most used open source projects there are. Apple has it in every computer they have. Cisco has it in every single router that they have. Novell uses it. It's everywhere.
Popular.
And they had said that many of these companies like Apple and Cisco haven't donated any money to their project or really gave them much credit, so yeah. I'm really thankful for them. I love them. I use SSH to log into my web servers all the time. I use it for remote admin stuff, and yeah, just love it.
Love SSH. Me too. Another one that fits in that is curl and rsync. Very useful tools. We use them all the time. Curl for doing we use curl all over the place. I mean, especially you. You're kind of the web service guy. You use a lot of curl.
Yeah, Rocketship it. Actually uses curl to do, well, it uses PHP's implementation of curl to send SOAP requests or, well, XML requests and things. Mm-hmm. Rsync's great for backups. I use it every day. Well, it's automated, so I don't really have to.
Right, my Linux server uses it every day.
for backups. I also have to say I'm really thankful for Ubuntu. They've really pushed Linux
absolutely
in a good direction, I think.
Absolutely.
At first, I think they got a lot of criticism for being too user-friendly. I don't know how they could get criticized.
Well,
I
mean, Linux used to be the power user OS. I mean, it just clearly was. It was designed for people who love to do things and love to tweak things. So it was kind of a badge of honor. Like, I'm a Linux user and everything's hard, but I'm smart, so I use it, you know. And Ubuntu started making it easier, like, for instance, so schmucks like myself could install it. I mean, the reason I got into Linux was because, I mean, there used to be giant books and blog articles about how to install Linux. It was a very difficult process, and my coworker Tig said, I don't know, I heard this new distro called Ubuntu is super easy to install. And that's when I said, okay, well, you know what, I'm gonna make the switch. I'm gonna, you know, if I can get past the barrier to entry, which is installing it, and then force myself to learn what I need to learn, I can use this operating system. And it's been, you know, history ever since. I've just been using Linux ever since.
Yeah, I have a history of trying pretty much every distro, anywhere from Gentoo, which you have to compile everything from scratch, including Linux itself, to Ubuntu, which is super easy to install. And I have to say, I'm thankful for the other ones as a learning experience. But you know, when I just don't want to mess with like X.org configurations and just. Certain things should work. If I want to tweak them, you know, I can go in there and tweak them. But certain things, you know, like the monitor, you know, the graphics interface should kind of work by default.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of old Linux guys, they always said like, well, I want everybody to use Linux. But what they really meant was I want everybody to be a power user, which can't happen. If you really want everyone to use Linux, people need to be able to just shove the disk in and install it. And actually Ubuntu, I mean, its install like speed and ease is easily rivaling or surpasses Windows, you know, and Windows 7 installs a lot better than the previous versions, but it's really easy to install and I like it a lot. So go ahead.
And not to mention, you know, just web servers in general for Linux, you know, PHP hosted sites and Rails and Ruby and all those sites that we're using. Agile Task is hosted on Linux.
I mean, I think that Ubuntu did everything right. Now that maybe I'm biased because I, you know, now that's sort of the way I learned Linux, but, you know, having a Debian core, I think that I like Debian as a distro. I think it's a good one to have as a base. They expanded on that. You know, they made the user interface very easy to use. They went with GNOME, I think, which is Windows enough that people were kind of used to it. So we'll see what they go in the future. But thank you, Ubuntu, Canonical, and Mark Shuttleworth for being awesome.
Next one is Google Docs, which we use to host our show notes for. That's what I use it the most for, I guess.
Absolutely. Actually, I'm using it a lot more for work. But I'm using a lot more for work now. We put a lot of docs in it because we're doing a lot of collaborative docs. And it's just really the easiest way to do a collaborative document. You know, if you need a simple spreadsheet, Google Docs is good for that. It's really good. I like it for the base of everything. It's not very good at making things pretty and super fancy. But if you just need, you know, I just want to be able to collaborate on text generation. I want to collaborate on slide generation. I want to collaborate on a simple spreadsheet. You can't beat Google Docs. It's awesome. We did have one complaint, though. They do this a lot. If you use Google Docs, you are a guinea pig. So I think it was a week ago. If you added a comment to a doc, it put a little thing on the side. I liked that user interface. It put the comment on the side, you know, out of the flow of the document. Just today, I put a comment in a doc that we were working on, and it put the comment in line or something. It's like, come on, Google, stop that. Quit switching it. Like, every once in a while, they'll have, like, advanced collaboration features, and then 2 days later, they're gone. No notification or anything. It's stupid. They need to fix that. It's driving me nuts.
Yeah, we use it every week, so we notice things like that. I've seen it where it goes one way, and then like the next week it's back to its original way, and then another week after that it's like the new way again.
Yeah,
and, it can be frustrating, but
very frustrating.
Another one is source code management.
I'm gonna say distributed source code management. So granted, yes, you need to be using SCM in some way or another, and you know CVS, Subversion are better than nothing. But what I'm super thankful for is distributed SCM, because I really, with doing that project Agile Task with you and Rob this year, I really got a handle on, you know, my favorite, which is Git. But I really understand the power of distributed SCM.
Yeah, I use Git and Mercurial. As far as my workflow goes, they're identical, and I like them both. And I'm glad there's choice out there, I really like Mercurial just because it's written in Python and you can start up like servers and stuff into it. We've talked about that before. I'm really thankful for GitHub because it's just an awesome place to share open source stuff. I have a simple Python script that checks to see if your website's up. And just today I had somebody do some work on it. He like fixed a few bugs and
he forked
added
it and
some
did
features
a pull request, right?
Forked it. Yeah, like, and so he did a pull request, and I was able to just merge that in, and it was like, you know, cool. That's work I didn't have to do to it, and
totally.
It makes the project better, you know, and it enhances it. So, also, like, you can, I don't know, I guess I wasn't around, I wasn't in the whole open source contributing portion of the open source thing back when, like, SourceForge was really hot and heavy. So I'm not sure, I can't really compare it to that, but as far as today goes, I just really like the whole GitHub interface and being able to see code change daily. I mean,
well, I think that's a big thing that GitHub did is the whole fork any project thing. And I don't think SourceForge did that. When GitHub says social coding, they really mean social coding, and it's very flexible, very distributed. I can fork any public repository, do my own work, and then issue a pull request back to them. I think SourceForge was more like, if you're an open source project, host on here. Not, you know, it was really geared towards big teams, not individual developers. And even, you know, GitHub, they added like organizational support later. At its core, it was a place for developers to put up stuff and then to collaborate and work with each other.
So, well, and it's basically an interface to Git as well. So, I mean, the code, the source and everything is displayed automatically. You don't have to like, you know, make a web page and then have like a download section. It's just, it's all there. Yeah. It's great.
So conversely, you like Bitbucket too, right? You're a Bitbucket guy.
I like them both. I'm thankful for Bitbucket just because it's the, you know, it's the GitHub for Mercurial. And as well as they've offered free, like unlimited private projects. I have some in-house stuff that I'd like to store off somewhere. And I gladly pay for that, but they made it free. So, as soon as they do have a disk limit. I think it's a couple hundred megabytes or something. Mm-hmm. If I ever hit that, I'm going to gladly pay the couple extra bucks for that just because I like it.
Yeah, so check it out.
The next one is encryption. Thankful for that, because if we didn't have it, we wouldn't really be able to do anything online. We wouldn't be able to do banking or any type of transactions.
I was wondering where you're going to go with that. I mean, I'm thankful for encryption, but I was like, I don't really really know how you present that, which is why there's like the little gap there. But that's, you make an excellent point. Without it, we would not be able to do anything important.
It's one of those things that you just, you take for granted. Every time you see HTTPS, that's allowing us to do credit card transactions and things like that.
Or SSH, right? I mean, SSH, I'm doing stuff to my server over an encrypted tunnel, you know, like that's awesome.
Encryption is one of those computer problems that it's been solved. I mean, there's encryption out there that the government with their largest supercomputers that we know of cannot crack. So
until we get quantum computing, then it'll break everything.
In fact, Skype, our conversation now is being encrypted.
No.
The people can't peer to peer, end to end.
People can't peep into this conversation and get the show early. That's crazy talk. All right. The next one, dude, I agree. One is Dropbox. I am so thankful for Dropbox. Dropbox is awesome, 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 awesome.
I just tweeted them out the other day, and I just said, thanks. You guys are awesome. I haven't paid for their service, and I feel guilty just because I love it so much. If they said tomorrow, sorry, the free plan's up, it's $5 a month or whatever, I'd say, okay.
Yeah, I haven't reached my limit yet. Yeah, I mean, as soon as I reach my size limit, I would gladly pay for it because it's worth its weight in bits. I don't know. It's just awesome. I mean, some people have asked me. I mean, I keep all of my my projects, I keep them all on Dropbox. I don't have to worry about committing and pushing before I go home from work because if I close my terminal window, Dropbox syncs it up. I come home to my Linux computer, go into that, my Dropbox directory, my projects, and they're all there. It's all good. I have one single workspace across all my computers. It works great. They don't charge you for transfer, so like all the little log changes and stuff that Rails does, I don't get charged for that or anything. So it's great. I love it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that they chose to do the whole cross-platform with even Linux. It really just makes it that much better. The next one is the whole REST API type stuff. I've dealt with enough SOAP and some of the older web services type APIs, and they're pretty much a nightmare compared to REST. So I'm glad that that's
totally
coming out.
Yeah, REST is good. I like it as a convention. The next thing that we're grateful for as far as programming goes is a little library we use called Duplicity. We've talked about it before. Basically, Duplicity allows you to back up, back up. It backs up a file, but before it does, it encrypts it, and it does it, it does like incrementally so that it doesn't use, you know, a ton of space each time. And as Mark and I both found, it will put your backups on Amazon S3 so easily that it feels wrong.
Yeah, its main thing is it's very efficient, like rsync. It doesn't waste bandwidth. It's not quite as efficient just because it has to do the encryption. But if you ever tried, well, with the encryption, by it's a really hard problem to solve because encryption it changes everything. One bit on the thing, the whole thing changes. So it's able to encrypt it, and it's able to do it efficiently, and it's able to do it in S3 just ridiculously easy, like three lines of code.
Yeah.
So easy. Very awesome backup solution. The next one is Skype. We're recording right now using Skype. We use it to talk about our projects.
When we first started doing the show, we were like, we can use Skype in an emergency. But really, the delay was kind of an issue. It just was a little too delayy, had a little too much delay. The audio quality wasn't quite where we wanted it to be. And then this year, this summer, we were just so busy that really it was impractical for you to come to Bozeman all the time and me to go to Whitehall much. So we ended up being forced to do over Skype a lot more. And what's funny is it's so much more natural now. I mean, it's like it isn't really a big deal for us to do it over Skype anymore because the latency is just so low. The audio quality is really nice. It works great.
Yeah, and they've added some really impressive features. I remember we had the Less Accounting.
Steve Bristol.
Steve Bristol on, and you know, we were messing around with stuff because normally we have echoes back, and Skype has some kind of algorithm to take echoes out if somebody's got their speakers on, they're not using headphones or whatever.
Yeah.
Or in our case, if we're using the mixer where it pipes it back out, it's smart enough to take that out. So it's really been good.
It's funny when you turn your, like, if you turn your speakers on, take off your headphones, I'll echo for probably 2 seconds. I can hear it through the speakers, and then Skype will take care of it and cut it out. I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing. They're super smart about it. So thank you, Skype. The other application for our podcast that we're thankful for is, kind of thankful for is Audacity. Audacity sometimes has been a pain, but for the most part, it's been a pretty good application for recording our podcast. I like the interface. It's pretty simple, pretty clean. I wish it was updated more, and because like right now we're recording it in Audacity on Linux. We used to record it in Audacity on the Mac, so we'll see how this goes. We thought maybe the Linux one might be more stable, but in general, I took a look at, Mark found another audio recording program that was open source, and I took a look at it, and I spent about 5 minutes on it, and I said, man, I am thankful for Audacity because it is simple. So we need to figure out a way to do backup recording that doesn't require a piece of software that I cannot figure out. Holy cow.
Yeah, I think that was more for sound engineers or something.
Yeah, it looked intense, and I am no sound engineer.
So yeah, other than the few crashes we've had and lost episodes, it's been good.
Yep.
Open source programming languages. I like Python, Ruby. We've written some apps in both of those. Mm-hmm. I have to say, you know, I don't write much Perl anymore, but I'm thankful for them because they got me into programming, you know, past PHP. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'd probably still be doing PHP.
Yeah.
To this day.
Yeah, I really blossomed with Ruby this year. So again, doing AgileTest with you guys really helped. I like Ruby a lot. Thank you, Ruby.
I have to be thankful for decent internet. I live in a small town and I had the worst wireless antenna that goes to a wireless thing on some mountain that goes to a town 30 miles away that goes to probably a DSL connection or something.
Actually, that's why we didn't record over Skype, because you had really such junky internet. I think that, originally that's why we couldn't. Originally, we couldn't record over Skype at all, or if we had to, it was really dire straits. Then when you got your good internet, we were kind of like, well, if we have to, but it's still kind of weird, and now it's not anything at all. But yeah, I remember.
Yeah, so now I have 7 megabit DSL, like just awesome. Well, it's just awesome for me. I mean, somebody else probably has like gigabit somewhere, but it's everything that I ever need, and it's awesome. It's one of those things you kind of forget about just because it's like an infrastructure thing.
When you don't have it, you loathe not having it. When you have it, you're pretty content. You kind of forget how awesome it is. So, another thing I'm very thankful for is Linode. If you would have asked me last year, I said I was so thankful for DreamHost. Still am. I think DreamHost is great for particular things. But this year we started doing Rails apps and production Rails apps. So I said I want a VPS. We found Linode. Linode's been great. I like it a lot. They're really cool guys.
Yep. Droid. I have to be thankful for this just because it's my first real smartphone.
I didn't even shut my phone off for this episode because I was hoping something would make it make some noise so that we could talk about it. But geez, I'm not not a popular guy tonight. Yeah, I've had a lot of smartphones, Windows Mobile smartphones, and the Droid has changed the way I think of a smartphone. It's a great phone. And the Droid itself, I think, just catapulted Android into relevancy. Or into relevance, I guess it would be the proper way to say it. Before, it was kind of like a one-off thing, a couple T-Mobile phones, but then once they started, you know, they put it out on Verizon, they put a huge marketing blitz behind it, and it was very successful, and I think it really made it a useful and popular platform.
I also like it because it's catapulting Linux. As we've said, we really like that. Things like, you know, getting... Google's working on getting Flash. Well, they already have it now, you know, Flash on Linux and on the Droid. That just helps Flash get better on the Linux desktop as well. So it kind of goes, they both help each other out there. So
another thing about the physical hardware of the Droid that I like, that I'm very thankful for, is the micro USB standard that all major cell phone manufacturers are adhering to now. Now you can have the same plug-in on multiple devices. My Nook is micro USB. My Droid is micro USB. My parents' phones are micro USB, so I can go over to their house and charge my phone without having to bring a cable. You know, you only need like one or two cables in your car now. You don't need 30 of them, one for each device. So I think as that standard, as more people adopt it, which I hope they do, I will be very happy, and I'm very thankful for it.
Absolutely. I'm also thankful, and I'm sure you are too, for having great team members and our projects that we're doing, as well as the show.
With AgileTask, it's me, you, and Rob. You guys, I'm very thankful for. You guys are a great team. I enjoy every second of working with you guys. You always keep it fun and fresh, and I appreciate it. So
we don't fight too much.
Don't fight too much. It's one of those things where you realize how thankful you are for a great team once you get it, because we do get in arguments, but we always act like adults in the end, and it never hold any grudges or anything, so it's good. For Face Off, Mark, thank you. I'm glad the show has gone on this long. We're coming up on 2 years, episode 100 in four episodes, so that's pretty crazy. And I'm thankful for that. And most of all, I think I speak for Mark as well when I say we are super, super thankful for our listeners and guests for the show. Thank you for listening, guys. We always appreciate it. Thank you for being on the show if you were a guest. We really appreciate it. What do you think of that?
I think we've hit the end of our list of thankfulness. There's obviously way more things to be thankful for. And this is, kind of a technology type, centered one. Obviously, there's family and all that stuff too. And if there's, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we've missed. It's not because we hate the other things.
Just it's not that we're not thankful. It's just, look, we're coming up on a 40-minute podcast when we usually do a half an hour, and we could sit and talk about stuff that we're thankful for all darn night. So let's move on. Thank you again, guys. That wraps up this episode of Face Off. If you haven't subscribed to the show, please go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can do so there. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can comment on the episode, tweet us out, send us an email. We'd love to hear from you guys. We appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Again, we are very thankful for you guys, and we will see you next week.